If you watch TV, you know that a bunch of episodes make up a series, and that's kind of the way we do our lessons around here, where we'll spend different weeks kind of putting together one big series. The series that we're in right now is called Happiness, and that's what it's about. It's about how to be happy, how to really find happiness in life. We're looking at Jesus's probably his most famous speech ever. Some people call it the Sermon on the Mount, but you've probably heard it before. It starts out where he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And he'll say other things like, "Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed, 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 blessed." And this word blessed, it's not just a word that church people use in churches. It really means happiness. But not just this fake, kind of shallow, Sunday morning smiles happiness. It's the kind of happiness that lives above the circumstances of life. Like an anchor, an inner joy that no one can take from you. It's a happiness that doesn't ride the roller coaster of the ups and downs in life. That's what it means, Jesus would say, to be blessed. So if you've been following along the past few weeks, you know we've kind of been taking those statements, those blessed statements, blessed are the blank, whatever, and we've spent a week on each one. Well, that was really only the beginning of the message. This message goes on for several more chapters, and what I want to kind of do today is fly over those chapters to kind of get a bigger picture of what Jesus is trying to say. What he does is he explains, you know, what it looks like to be happy, or he explains these little happiness statements, and then he stops and he paints a picture of what this kind of life would be like. He gets a little poetic, you know, it's kind of like a metaphor, and he says, and you've probably heard this before, but he says, "You are the salt of the earth," which to us really doesn't mean very much because we've got, you know, Chick-fil-A and all these other amazing places to eat, right? We've got all these different flavors. When we want to go eat something, we have a million different options. But to them, you know, 2,000 years ago, their menu was pretty simple. They didn't have much. And salt had a way of bringing the flavor out of food. And so Jesus would say, this kind of life that you live, it makes you people like the kind of people that bring the flavor out of life. It's an appealing picture. And then he goes on, he gives them another metaphor, and he says, "You are like the light of the world." The light of the world, which again is another picture that we take for granted. Why? Because there are lights all around us. In this room, there are dozens of lights. But back then, they didn't have a little light switch that turned on, you know, dozens and dozens of lights. When it got dark at night, it was pretty much dark everywhere, except for little candles or homemade torches that they had. So to these people, light was a something that they didn't take for granted like we do. They understood the value of it. So Jesus, talking about living this life of happiness, living this life that's blessed above the circumstances of life, he's saying, you kind of people will be the kind of people that bring flavor to this place. Your presence brings flavor to situations, and you're like light in dark places. This is appealing. This is something that people wanted to hear. And so as he's speaking, there are large crowds, and they're all coming in to listen. They're leaning in because this is not a kind of teaching they're used to. These people that Jesus was teaching to, they lived in a very strict religious society where it was like, don't do this, and don't do this, and don't forget about that, and you can't do this, and don't break that law. And it was rules and regulations and consequences, and that was kind of how they lived. That was their idea of a life of faith. And here, Jesus presents something totally different. Something you'd want to be. The kind of people that bring, that make life taste good for the people around them. Right? So how? How then do we do this? Remember, this is still the very beginning. This is still the introduction to his whole entire message. What does this look like? How do we live that salt kind of life? If you're familiar with this part of the Bible, you know that Jesus kind of goes on for a while here, and he hits on all these hot button issues. But he gives them a crystal clear, a simple principle to live by, a principle that will help them navigate all their decisions. And this morning for you, if you're a church person that's been in the church for a really, really, really long time, this might be a good opportunity for you to kind of come back to your roots and remember what matters most. Or maybe you're new to the church. Maybe you haven't spent much time in church, or you've been here for a few weeks during the series, and you're hearing all these things we're talking about, like, you know, being merciful and poor in spirit, and there's all these other things that are kind of hard to comprehend, and they seem a little weird. Well, this one principle will guide you in the right direction no matter what. So he gives them this crystal clear principle, but he doesn't just come out and say it. He kind of builds up. He builds up to this principle. And if you want to follow along in the Bibles, in the pews, we're on page 1505. You don't have to, but if you'd like to do that, if that'd be helpful for you, you can. Here's what he says, right? So Jesus has just, he's painted this picture of a life that people want to live, of a life that's light in dark places, of a life that gives flavor to the situations that it's in. And he gives a little bit of a disclaimer. He says, and I'm paraphrasing here, he says, you're going to hear me mention the law and the prophets. That was kind of like their Bible back then. That was the words they lived by. You're going to hear me mention those things. Don't think that I've come to get rid of them. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm coming to do is show you what they really mean. To show you the heart behind it. It's kind of like a disclaimer, right, before he goes into this subject. He's not tossing these things away. He's helping them see clearly, almost like they're he's helping them to see a black and white picture in color. And here's what he says. He touches on the hot button issues of the day, the things that those people 2,000 years faced with on a regular basis. He starts off and he says, and this is probably not what they were expecting. After this image of salt and light. He says, you've heard it said, talking about that law, right? You've heard it said, you shall not murder. But I tell you, if you're angry with someone or calling them names, it's just as bad. People probably weren't expecting that. And then he goes on to another hot button issue. He says, how about adultery, right? Cheating on your spouse. He says, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you, if you even look at a woman, if you even lust after a woman and desire her and embrace those thoughts, you're just as bad. It's just as bad as cheating on her. He would talk about oaths, and he says, you've heard it said, don't break a vow, don't break an oath. But he says, but I tell you, just say yes and no. Don't make any big fancy swears or oaths or promises. Anything beyond that, that's evil. These people, they're probably thinking, what is he trying to say? Where is he going with this? He talks about how to deal with your enemies. He says, you've heard it say, an eye for an eye. But I tell you, and here's that famous phrase, I tell you, if someone slaps you on one cheek, turn the other cheek. If someone takes your shirt, give them your coat. If they force you to go 1 mile, you go another mile with them. He talks about judging people And he says, you're so quick to judge other people, to point out their little flaws, as if you're wiping a speck of sawdust out of somebody else's eye. Yet, you're missing the fact that it's like there's a plank in your eye. You know, if I'm one of these people that's listening to this message, I'd be thinking, all right, can we go back to the salt and the light pictures, right? That sounded a lot better than what he's trying to say here. But then he gives them this principle. What Jesus is not saying here, and don't miss this, what he is not trying to do is beat people up. He's not trying to make people feel like they're fighting a winless battle. He's not trying to make them feel like they're way worse than they ever thought they were. In fact, if you look at the reaction, the way people respond when this message is over, it says they were astounded. They were impressed by the way he taught, and large crowds followed him. So it seems like maybe we're missing something here. Well, here's what he is saying. Right after this, right after he goes through all those kind of intense examples, he gives them a principle, a crystal clear, simple, guiding principle that basically serves as an interpretive filter for everything he's just said. It's found in chapter 7, verse 12, and I'll read it to you. He says this. He says, so, he's just covered all those complicated subjects. He says, so in everything you do, in everything I've just talked about, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Remember in the very beginning he opened with, hey, I'm going to talk about the law and the prophets. Well, here he is saying, this is what all of that was really about. In the original Greek manuscripts, it says literally, this is the law and the prophets. Not sums up, but this is what it is trying to say, all of it, all the law, all the prophets, all the New Testament teachings. It comes back to this, you do unto others as you would have them do to you. This is what they've been trying to say the whole entire time. Not treat others as they deserve to be treated. Not treat others as you want to treat them. But treat others as you would have them treat you. It's been phrased this way in other parts of the Bible where Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, we've all heard that before, right? We call it the golden rule. A lot of times we put it in a frame. You'll see it on the wall of a Sunday school classroom or whatever, this golden rule. And it could be a little bit abstract. So maybe to make it a little bit more concrete, think about it like this. I went to school in Virginia, and there was an office that was always calling me. And every time I saw their number come up on my phone, I would ignore it because I didn't want to talk to them. I figured they wanted something from me, or they were going to ask me for money, or I had to pay a bill, or whatever. So I just never picked it up. Well, one time I accidentally picked up the phone, and they said, hello, this is the student advocate office. And we want to know how your year's going. And I was like, well, it's good. Go on. What do you want from me, right? And they had nothing. They just said, we just want to know if there's anything we could do for you. Were there any classes that you wanted to get in that you couldn't get into? Have you selected a meal plan for your time here at school? Do you have any questions about campus? And I came to find out that if there was a class I couldn't get into but wanted to, they would go to the registrar and try and get me into that class. And if they couldn't get me into that class, they would give me some kind of alternative that I could use for my degree. They were people that were just there for me. That's it. They were there to be with me and for me. They were my advocates. They cared for me. They took care of my needs. So maybe to put a little bit of meat on this principle of this love your neighbor, do unto others principles, we call it being an advocate to other people. Right? To be an advocate is to be primarily concerned and even emotionally invested in the good of other people. Advocates for the human race. When you're someone's advocate, you're in their corner. You're on their side. You want to take care of them. You want to provide for their needs. An advocate is with you and for you. And this advocate principle can be our guiding principle for all areas of life. Right? When you're in some kind of issue with someone or some kind of situation with someone, whether it's the most common or the most extreme situation, you can stop. Right? And instead of asking the do unto others principle, maybe you stop and say, am I acting as their advocate in this situation? Am I in their corner? Whose side am I on? Right? Or maybe you say, whose interest is driving my action? That is the whole do unto others principle. So you take a few examples then. The few things that Jesus talked about, remember those really harsh things? And you use this as the filter to interpret what Jesus said, right? Maybe we start with that whole idea of adultery, right? The Bible uses that word adultery, but really what it is cheating on your spouse. So let's replace that with that term, right? So Jesus would say, you've heard it say, don't cheat on your spouse, but I tell you that if you desire, you go after, you want another woman, you embrace those, you've it's like you've already cheated on her. Why? Why? Because in neither situation have you acted as her advocate. In neither situation have you acted with her interest in mind. It's not that he's saying, you know, if you look at a girl the wrong way, you might as well just go ahead and cheat on your wife. That's not what he's saying. He's saying you didn't go wrong when you cheated on her. You went wrong when you stopped thinking about what was best for her. The same thing with murder, right? Jesus is saying you didn't go with the whole name calling thing, how he equates that with murder. You know, he's saying, look, you didn't go wrong when you killed him. You went wrong when he became your adversary and you stopped serving as his advocate, right? Because in both situations, you're tearing them down. In neither situation do you have their interest in mind. He talked about an eye for an eye. Right? When he said, you've heard it said an eye for an eye, but I tell you to turn the other cheek. He says, if somebody takes your shirt, find out if they need your coat. Right? Care for them. He's not saying let people walk all over you. Just be somebody that people just take advantage of. He's saying just care for other people. You can't be someone's advocate and their adversary at the same time. It's this principle we carry through all the rest of this sermon and all the rest of the Bible. That's what it's saying. It's just the whole rest of it is just an articulation of this principle. He says when you're judging people, remember with the specks and the plank in your eye, remember he's saying when you're arguing with someone, rather than nitpicking and finding all their faults and what they did and how you didn't like their tone, well, they said, stop. And step back and be their advocate. And think, what is it like to be on the other side of this conversation? What am I doing wrong here? Be primarily concerned and emotionally invested in the other party. This is our guiding principle. Yet we get obsessed, a lot of people in the church, with the rules. You know, I don't want to break the rules. We wouldn't have to think about the rules if we were thinking about the interest of other people. And you can use this, like I kind of said earlier, to just allow you to make decisions in all areas of life. You know, a lot of times there are those gray areas A lot of times in church circles, we talk about gossip, you know, and talking behind people's backs. And you'll often hear people say, well, I don't know what point it's gossip. You know, I don't want to gossip. I don't want it to be. You know, at what point have I crossed the line? Well, maybe you stop asking at what point you've crossed the line and start asking at what point have I stopped caring about the interest of the person I'm talking about. And maybe that's where the line is. Or maybe it's with parenting. You know, there's a lot of discussion about should you yell at your kids? Should you not yell at your kids? How do you do that? Well, maybe instead of what's right or wrong, you start thinking, when am I acting in the interest of my kids and when am I not? When am I yelling because my fuse happens to be short that day? And when am I trying to make a point? You know, I certainly have not mastered this principle, but my daughter, Mia, we have a little pool, and the wall's about 3 feet high, and she can't get into it, and we take the ladder out so that she couldn't get into it if she wanted to. But to make a point, every time she grabs onto the wall and looks over, I go over there, and I muster up some anger to show her this is a serious, serious thing. Not because I'm angry and I want to, you know, explode on her, but because I want her to know this is not something, this is not an area that we play around. And like I said, I've messed up millions and millions of times, right? There are times where it's because the fuse is short. But to know when it's right and when it's wrong, you ask whose interest is driving my action? Am I an advocate for the opposite party in this situation? The problem with the culture that Jesus was speaking to at the time was that there were these religious people, you know, they thought they were so great because they obeyed all the rules, and they had these big sins, these big things. Well, oh, you're okay, you're a good person, unless you do these really big, bad sins, like killing people and, like, you know, cheating on your spouse and breaking vows. Those are the big ones you don't want to do. They had these lines. As long as you don't cross the line, you're fine. And that's really our culture, too, especially in the church. You know, we have these big things. You know, you don't do those big, bad ones. But as long as you don't cross that line, you're okay. Like I said before, maybe Jesus would say, look, stop worrying about the line and start thinking about people. Right? That's why he would say you didn't go wrong when you killed him. You went wrong when you stopped trying to build him up and started trying to tear him down. But there's a missing piece here, right? There's a catch. There's a key that gets this system going, that allows us to begin thinking in this way. And to explain that to you, I want to give you a quick example. Did anybody watch the Olympics? Okay, right. My wife and I, we like to watch the swimmers in the lap pool, you know, Michael Phelps and all those other people. And there were three people that I noticed. One, the first person was the lifeguards in the lap pool, right? If you ever felt like you had a useless job, there were lifeguards in the lap pool at the Olympics, right? But that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. The other group of people, right, were the officials. In every lane, there was at least one, sometimes two officials for every single swimmer. And what they did was they watched to make sure on the relays that the wall was touched before the swimmer would leave. They made sure all their strokes were right. They made sure they didn't step outside the lines or do something they weren't supposed to do. And if they did, they got called on it and they were disqualified. They had these same officials at the tracks, right? And they were the people that would blow the whistle or shoot the gun or whatever when somebody would false start, which is the most depressing thing in the world. When these Olympic runners false start, you know, they work for 4 years and then they flinch at the starting line and it all goes down the toilet. Nobody cares. You're just disqualified. You can't race anymore. So it's sad. But anyway, you have these officials. They're there just to make sure you don't do anything wrong. And then the last person that I noticed in the Olympics, or somebody that stood out to me, was this man whose wife was an Olympic swimmer. He happened to be her coach and her husband. I want to show you this video.
Katinka Hosu, obviously, with being right on the world record pace.
We mentioned Shane Tusa, her husband. He will not be shocked. He will be the most animated of anyone out there. Tusa has instilled that belief. He knows that his wife has a chance at this time to take the world record away from Yi Shi Wen, but in the end, just barely.
This was the race she won but didn't break the world record. And then there was another race where she actually did break the world record. The best part about that video is the guy's little man bun. But here's my point, right? Most of us have this tendency, including myself, where when we think of God, we think of him as the official, someone who's hovering over us, making sure we do everything right, and wanting to jump all over us as soon as we step out of bounds, or as soon as we mess up a little bit. But in reality, from what the Bible teaches, God is way more like that husband than he is like the official. Radically, audaciously, in an undignified way, pulling for us, supporting us, right? He's our biggest fan. He is emotionally invested, primarily concerned with us. That's what the story of Jesus going to the cross was all about, for us. Not for him, not to make him look good, but so that we could have this new way of life, so that we could live life with him. And what we need to understand is that to be an advocate for others, we need to understand that Jesus is an advocate for us. To be an advocate for others, you need to understand that Jesus is an advocate for you. And here's the amazing part. A guy named John writes in one of his letters, he says, I write to you, in 1 John, he says, I write to you so that you may not sin. But even if you do, you have an advocate with the Father, Jesus. The righteous one. He's our advocate. He's pulling for us when we succeed, and he's pulling for us, and he's there for us when we fail. When we feel close and when we feel far away, he's in our corner. He's on our side. One of my favorite parts of the entire Bible, it's in a letter. A guy named Paul writes a letter to a church in Rome, and the whole beginning of the letter is explaining what Jesus did. And how he died on the cross and all this stuff. He tells like the whole gospel story, and he stops. And he says, what then shall we say to all these things I've just talked about? If God is for us, who can be against us? As if to say, what else does he have to do to show you that he's on our side? He's not there just waiting to drop the hammer and to judge you. He's for you. He's in your corner. And when we realize that, it'll totally change the way we think. When we understand that our slate is permanently clean before God because of what Jesus did, we'll be able to be advocates for other people. When we internalize that Jesus is going to take care of us no matter what, we'll be able to take care of people no matter what. Even if they take our shirt, right, we could give them our coats because Jesus has a lot of coats and he's the one taking care of us. We can be advocates for others because we have an advocate for us. And I'll leave you with this, and that'll be it. remember this whole thing? It's all wrapped up in a sermon and a message about how to be happy, about happiness. And this is a way of life that brings you happiness because it works. Because there's no better feeling than knowing that your slate is clean and that you're good with God. There's no better feeling than knowing that you've helped someone who needed it, that you've lifted somebody who's been down. It works. Life is better. Can you imagine a marriage, even, to give you a simple illustration, where a husband is 100% totally emotionally invested in the well-being of his wife, and in return, the wife is 100% primarily invested and emotionally concerned with her husband? It's a beautiful thing. It would be an amazing thing to be a part of. And that same principle can apply to our friendships, can apply to our communities. Could you imagine if you took a couple hundred people, like the people here and the people in the first service, and you plopped them in the middle of a community, and you told all of them that their mission from God was to be advocates for each other and for the community? It would turn that place upside down. And maybe we would catch a glimpse of what Jesus said, of what Jesus meant when he said, "You are the salt of the earth. You bring flavor to this place. You are light in a place that can be dark." But it only comes, it only happens when we realize that we have an advocate, that someone who is with us and for us, someone who is radically and audaciously pulling for us, someone who is on our side no matter what. Jesus, the advocate of the human race. Let's pray, and then we'll close. God, thank you that you put your interest aside to care for us, that you love us, that you are so slow to judge and so quick to pull for us, to cheer for us, to be in our corner, because you have our best interest in mind. Would you help us to live lives that embrace that reality, so that we would know, like I said earlier, how high and how far and how deep and how wide your love for us is. And we would live like people who believe that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.